أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. سورة نمبر 92، سورة الليل. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. والليل إذا يخشى والنهار إذا تجلى وما خلق الذكر والأنثى إن سعيكم لشتى فأما من أعطى واتقى وصدق بالحسنى فسنيسره لليسرى وأما من بخل واستغنى وكذب بالحسنى فسنيسره للعسرى. By the night when it envelopes, by the day when it brightens, by him who created the male and the female, your endeavors are indeed unlike. As for him who gives and is God-weary and confirms the best promise, we shall surely ease him into facility. But as for him who is stingy and self-complacent and denies the best promise, we shall surely ease him into hardship. This surah, in the orders of the chapters revealed to the Prophet, is mentioned to be the ninth chapter. So that should be quite early in the time of Ba'tha. The ninth surah, naturally, it should be in the first year of Ba'tha. So one of the earliest surahs revealed to the Prophet. However, both the content of the surah and the cause of revelation mentioned in both Sunni and Shi'i traditions tell us that the surah should be a Madani surah. It should have been revealed in Medina. So we have to choose either to reject the traditions which talk about the cause of revelation, and that all the traditions which talk about the orders of the chapters of the Qur'an, the chronological order of the chapters of the Qur'an. We have several versions of the orders, chronological orders of the chapters of the Qur'an, which differ with each other. It is not possible to ascertain in a definitive way that what was really the chronological order of these chapters and surahs and verses. Therefore, we may say that we opt for choosing the cause of revelation rather than the traditions about the order of revelation. You know that the Quran was revealed in a different order as it is compiled. And some say that it was put in this order by the instruction of the Prophet, peace be on him, and in his time. And some say that no, this happened after the Prophet, peace be on him. When they were compiling the Quran, they decided to use this format and this order of the surahs, putting the bigger surahs, the longer surahs at the beginning, and then going towards the end, ordering the very shorter surahs. There, and therefore the Madani surahs came in the beginning of the Qur'an, and the Makki surahs mostly were put at the end. It is difficult to accept that this was done after the time of the Prophet, peace be on him, because we know that there were several compilations of the Qur'an at the time of the Prophet, like the compilation of Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, and the compilation of Ubayy ibn Ka'ab, and compilation of Abu Musa Ash'ari, and other companions of the Prophet who had their own versions of the Qur'an compiled. So it's very difficult to agree that this order of compilation was done after the Prophet, peace be on him, although both Sunni and Shia scholars have mixed views. Some of them say that it was done during the lifetime of the Prophet, some say afterwards. One very important evidence which supports that this order of compilation was by the instruction of the Prophet, peace be on him, and was done during his lifetime, was that the compilation which was done at the time of Abu Bakr, which uses the same order of surahs, was not used by Muslims for several years, at least until the time of the unification of all the codexes in the time of Uthman. The reason is that the Bukhari tradition, which talks about the compilation of the Quran at the time of Abu Bakr, says that Abu Bakr used Zayd ibn Thabit, who was a young scholar, to compile the Quran. However, after he compiled it, they archived it at Hafsa's home. Hafsa, the wife of the Prophet and daughter of Abu Bakr, they just put it there or entrusted it to Hafsa, and no Muslim saw that copy until the time of Uthman, when they wanted to unify the codexes, and they brought it, they borrowed it actually from Hafsa and then gave it back to her. Therefore, the Muslims did not use that compilation at all. So they should have had other copies of the Quran available, which was more reliable to them than the official compilation of the Quran, which was done by Abu Bakr. And these were the compilations of Abdullah ibn Mas'ud and Ubay ibn Ka'b, who were the peak at the authority and knowledge of the Quran. And of course, Ali ibn Abi Talib had a compilation according to the chronological order, which the Muslims did not want to see, and he just took it away from them. So he did not have a compilation of his own, but he approved of the compilation and the order which was put by Ubay ibn Ka'b and Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. Therefore, we would we are bound to accept that the order of compilation was something which was agreed by the Prophet and done by the companions at his lifetime rather than afterwards. As I said, although some very prominent Shia scholars say that this order was something which was decided by the companions after the Prophet, peace be on him. Now, if we accept that the order of compilation was done at the time of the Prophet, therefore, we cannot really agree with the traditions which all differ about the chronological order of these surahs. As I said, because in the traditions on the chronological order, this surah is put in the ninth place after the Ba'tha. And the causes of revelation tells us that this surah was revealed in Medina. We just outbalance the traditions about the order of revelation and take the tradition about the cause of revelation. Now, the cause of revelation tells us that this was revealed in Medina. Both Sunni and Shi'i books report about the cause of revelation of the surah, that there was a man in Medina who was very poor, and he had a very rundown house in which there was a palm tree, and that tree belonged to a very rich man. And this rich man, whenever he wanted, he went into the house, and this man had many children, lots of people to look after, and this man annoyed them any time. For example, they wanted to he wanted to come and pick the dates, the children who wanted to eat, some of them which fell down, he came down and scolded them and even used to beat them. And the man was very unhappy about this, the poor man, that this is happening. So he complained to the Prophet, peace be on him, that this is what is happening. This man, every time he wants, he just comes in without permission, annoys everyone in the house, and he says, this is my tree, I have to use it. Apparently, the poor man didn't have any means to buy the complete house, so part of it was not bought by him. Now, the Prophet didn't say anything to that man, but saw the rich man. When he saw the rich man, he told him that, give me this palm tree, and I will promise you a palm tree in paradise. The man said, I don't need it, I don't want it. Despite he was, of course, probably a believer or a hypocrite or whatever, we don't know. He said, I don't need it. And someone else who was there overheard the conversation between the Prophet and this rich man, and afterwards went to the rich man and said, "How much do you sell your palm tree?" And he said, "This palm tree is the best palm tree I have, the best dates it gives. I like it very much. It's very high in price, so I don't think you can buy it." He said, "Just tell me a price." He said, 40 palm trees. He said, "I have a garden," which apparently had even more than 40 palm trees. He said, "I give it to you, and you give your palm tree to me." So they made the contract, the transaction. He took the garden, and the man took the palm tree, and went to the Prophet. I said, "Ya Rasulallah, this is the palm tree. Is the promise still there for a palm tree in paradise?" And Prophet said, "Yes." And so Prophet went to the poor man and said that, "This palm tree belongs to you now, do whatever you want." So this is the cause of revelation, which is mentioned by Al-Wahidi, who's a Sunni scholar, in Asbab al-Nuzul. Also it's reported in Tafsir al-Burhan from Imam al-Reza alayhi salam. Of course, Wahidi's tradition is very elaborate and detailed. Imam Reza's report is shorter, but they both refer to the same story. And after this happened, the story of the rich man, who was miserly, and he did not care about the poor man, and he did not want to accept that there is a paradise, a palm tree in paradise could be worth more than the whole world. He did not accept that and rejected the idea. And the other man who gave his garden for the hope of the promise of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala by his messenger and gave it to the Prophet. The story, the surah is referring to that story. Now we will see how it goes. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والليل إذا يخشى والنهار إذا تجلى. By the night when it envelopes, by the day when it brightens. Now, this is the difference between night and day, between darkness and brightness. Because Allah now wants to talk about the dark side of human being and the bright side of human being. The side of human being which is pious, which is generous, and that aspect of human being which is unpious, which is miserly. So the qasam is very, of course, suitable to begin with, to begin the surah with. And of course, there is a grammatical issue here, because وَاللَّيْلِ إِذَا يَخْشَى is in present format, is mudhari, والنهار إذا تجلى is in past, in mazi. And Allah Ta'ala, both in this surah and the previous surah, which has this, almost the same thing mentioned there, وَالضُّحَى وَاللَّيْلِ إِذَا سَجَى وَالشَّمْسِ وَالضُّحَاهَا وَالْقَمَرِ إِذَا تَلَاهَا وَالنَّهَارِ إِذَا جَلَّاهَا وَاللَّيْلِ إِذَا يَخْشَاهَا. Again, when it talks about the day, it puts it in past, jalla, and when it talks about the night, it puts it in present, yaghsha. Allama says that this is probably a reference to the time of the Prophet, when night has enveloped the day. That is, darkness has enveloped the goodness and brightness. The dark aspect of human being had overpowered the good aspect. So the present situation was the dark aspect of human race. And what comes out of it? وَالنَّهَارِ إِذَا جَلَّاهَا, the day when it starts to brighten it, was the appearance of the Prophet, the advent of Islam and the message of Islam. And here he says the same thing. That is why this sort of grammatical style is used here. So, by the night when it envelopes, by the day when it brightens, وَمَا خَلَقَ الذَّكَرَ وَالْأُنْثَى, and by that majestic being, again here ma is used instead of man, as we discussed in the last surah. Man refers to intelligent beings, ma refers to unintelligent things. However, he wants to say that by that being, which is so magnificent and has created the male and the female. Again, it talks about differences. As you see differences between night and day, as you see differences between male and female, there is differences between you in terms of your character, your nature, and your action. As these things are quite real, those things are quite real as well. Something which usually is not accepted and approved by many people. They say we are all human beings. No matter what we do, no matter what we believe in, we are all human beings. Here the surah wants to say, no, there is a difference, which is somehow unknown to you. In your natures, in your characters, there's a difference which it would transpire to be the biggest difference that you ever have seen in your life. The people of hell and the people of paradise, these are two opposite sort of creations of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, absolutely opposite each other. But you think while you are in this world that they are all human beings, that they are, and they are all the same. So, وَمَا خَلَقَ الذَّكَرَ وَالْأُنْثَى إِنَّ سَعْيَكُمْ لَشَتَّى. Your endeavors are different. And by that, your destiny would be different. By that, your nature would be different. Your experiences would be different. So, this qasams want to say that there is a huge importance in the differences of your endeavors. إِنَّ سَعْيَكُمْ لَشَتَّى. And this, of course, shows the importance, the emphasis the Quran places on action as against the pure faith. Because we had some sects in Islam, like Murji'ahs, to emphasize on faith rather than action. Like, for example, the Protestantism in Christianity, which says it's only faith which would bring salvation. Actions are not important, because actions are actually very trivial in the eyes of God. It's only the belief in Jesus and confirming that he has the divine nature which gives you salvation. Some sects in Islam as well, as I said, like Murji'ahs, they also believe that it's only faith. Actions are not important at all. And we, of course, have some Shi'i inclinations in some areas which say it's only love and faith. Faith in God, love for Ahlul Bayt, which is important, the actions are trivial, and with that love and faith, anything else would be forgiven. Without that, nothing will be accepted. It is that type of Murji'ite understanding of faith, or Protestant-like of understanding of faith, which gives importance to that aspect only. Here we see the Quran is putting great emphasis on acts rather than pure faith. إِنَّ سَعْيَكُمْ لَشَتَّى. So it doesn't talk about your beliefs, your views, your ideas. It talks about what you do. Sa'i means walking, or walking fastly. That's why Sa'i, we call Sa'i between Safa and Marwa. That's walking between Safa and Marwa. So, because walking is a sort of very clear act of human being, it is used for any act or for any action. So, your endeavors are indeed unlike. Now, how this is explained here, have that story in mind, because this is referring to that story. Of course, it is a lesson extracted from that story and put in general terms. فَأَمَّا مَنْ أَعْطَى وَاتَّقَى وَصَدَّقَ بِالْحُسْنَى فَسَنُيَسِّرُهُ لِلْيُسْرَى. As for him who gives and is God-wary, is God-wary in his giving, certainly. That means that not giving is not in itself something which would lead to salvation. It's giving and giving for the sake of something supreme, higher than worldly aims. The i'ta and taqwa together. Man a'ta wattaqa. Now, the story of Abu Dahdah, the name of that man who sold his garden for the palm tree was Abu Dahdah. Now, what he did, he sold his garden and generously gave it to that man, and gave the tree to the Prophet, because he was God-wary, of course. Because he saddaqa bil husna, he confirmed the best promise. Husna is the mu'annath of ahsan. So here husna, it either means al-qawlul husna or al-wa'adatul husna or al-khaslatul husna. Because husna in itself is an adjective. It needs something to be described here. So either the good promise, or the best character. He approved of that, confirmed that. فَأَمَّا مَنْ أَعْطَى وَاتَّقَى وَصَدَّقَ بِالْحُسْنَى فَسَنُيَسِّرُهُ لِلْيُسْرَى. We shall surely ease him into the easiest. Yusra, here is translated as facility, is something which is easiest. Now, نُيَسِّرُهُ لِلْيُسْرَى. Here, good acts, the exegetists have two meanings for this. One is, what was mentioned by all the exegetists, is that this yusra means good acts. And why yusra is good acts? Because good acts is according to the nature of human being. Human beings by nature love to do good. It is easy for them to do it. If it becomes difficult for some people, it is because their nature have changed, so it becomes difficult for them. It is because they do not confirm the best of all promises. Usually people should be happy to give what they have in the for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to do what they do for the sake of God, because they by nature know that they will first of all get the reward, and secondly they have a love of God in their heart. So that should be easier for them rather than doing the opposite. And Allah says, if someone gives, and gives out of taqwa, and confirms the good promise, we make all these things easy, facilitate for him doing good things. And in a sense, doing one good thing would bring another good thing. And doing that, another good thing would bring another. It will become very, very easy for human nature. This is one meaning of it. There's a deeper meaning to this. And this is, when we go to the next world, we have a path to go through. We have a distance to travel. And this could be done easily or hardly. If we have acted according to our initial nature in this world, when we go to the next world, it is absolutely easy to go through all those different stages and stations, and very easily we move towards God. Whether in Barzakh or on the Day of Judgment, it's very easy. You see, some people do not have questioning in the grave. This is what almost categorical Shiite traditions confirm, that question in the grave, coming to the certain stations in the Day of Judgment, is not for everyone. It is either for the very evil or for the very good. And the very good will instantly go up to a paradise, in whether in Barzakh or to a paradise in the Day of Judgment. They do not linger about as other souls do. Some souls linger about in initial stages of Barzakh for several for long times. We don't use our own scale of time here, for long time, until they go, because it's difficult for them to tread that path. On the Day of Judgment, the same. Some people, you have heard this very famous tradition, which is reported by both Sunni and Shi'i, that the Sirat, which is the inner aspect of the Sirat in this world, of the path that we go in this world, for some people it takes long, long time, ages to go. Even if they pass through it, it takes long time. It is very difficult. It is very horrifying For some people, it's just like blinking of an eye. Why? Because Allah has made this thing easy for them. Now it's according to their nature. They go very quickly, very fast through all these things, and they are placed in the vicinity of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In Surah Anbiya, when Allah speaks about the horrors of the Day of Judgment, it says, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ سَبَقَتْ لَهُمْ مِنَّ الْحُسْنَى أُولَٰئِكَ عَنْهَا مُبَعَدُونَ. For those about whom our nice word has been passed, that these have the good nature, they are far away from these things. لَا يَسْمَعُونَ حَسِيسَهَا. They never hear the slightest sound of the blazing of hell. While other people, they hear it, they are terrified by it. لا يسمعون حسيسها وهم في مشتهت أنفسهم خالدون. While people are going through all those things, they are already in what they like forever. لا يحزنهم الفزع الأكبر. That biggest of all horrors, that's Fazahul Akbar, which are things which happen on the Day of Judgment. For both believers and unbelievers, it happens. If believers have not acted according to this nature, لا يحزنهم الفزعول أكبر, the biggest of all horrors would not make them sad, would not depress them, because they do not experience it. وَتَتَلَقَّاهُمُ الْمَلَائِكَ. The angels would envelope them and take them. هذا يومكم الذي كنتم توعدون. This is what we were promising. Now, so for some people, these things are made very easy. سَنُيَسِّرُهُ لَلْيُسْرَى. We facilitate it for the easy path, for the easy travel, for the easy journey, easy whatever doing. Yusra is just mentioned as an open-end sort of description. So, this is one aspect. وَأَمَّا مَنْ بَخِلَ وَاسْتَقْنَى. But as for him who is stingy and self-complacent. Well, self-complacent here means that, remember again that man. He said, I don't need it. اسْتَقْنَى. He said, I don't need it, whatever Allah promises. Let me take what is in this world. Allah has given me these things in this world. I don't care about that world. So, by what Allah has given him, he feels that he is needless for the next world. Self-complacent here, which is a translation of istaqna, should be taken in this sense, that he feels that he is not in need at all for what is coming. Let's think about that day, when that day comes. But that doesn't work. Of course, for this world it works. Let's think about tomorrow. It works here. But for the next world it doesn't work. You have to think about it now. Otherwise, they would not give you a respite to think. There is no respite to think there. Whatever you want to think, you have to do it here. So, وَأَمَّا مَنْ بَخَلَ وَاسْتَغْنَى وَكَذَّبَ بِالْحُسْنَى. So denies the good promise. فَسَنُيَسَّرُهُ لِلْأُسْرَى. We shall surely ease him into hardship. Gradually he is moved. نُيَسَّرُهُ تَيْسِيرُ. Ease him. It means he gradually, even he doesn't realize it, that he is going towards hardship. And hardship is what comes afterwards. Now, these verses say something very, very important. And that is, the people will be what they are in the next world. Not the punishment or reward. The punishment or reward is something which is used as our this world's understanding, worldly understanding of what comes afterwards. There is no punishment or reward in that sense. We are our punishment, we are our reward, whatever we are. As we have in Surah Isra, قُلْ كُلٌّ يَعْمَلُ عَلَىٰ شَاكِلَتِهِ. Everyone acts according to his nature. Now, depending how we have formed our nature, in the next world, we will be eased to reach the sort of final manifestation of that nature. And the manifestation of that nature either is hell or is paradise. It's not a punishment that Allah brings on us. It's a punishment like, for example, if you somehow cut your arm with a knife, it would bleed. It's not, you cannot use this sort of expression that, well, if I cut my arm, the punishment for it is pain and bleeding. We don't use it. We say this is the consequence. And the consequences are what we are going to receive in the next world rather than punishment. So it is not Allah who puts us in hell. It is He who brings us out of the hell. I have mentioned this before in this dua that we do in month of Ramadan, Jawshan Kabir. What we say is, Al-Ghawth, Al-Ghawth, khallisna min an-nar ya Rabb. Now some clever people say, isn't it Allah who puts us in hell, so why we plead to Him, save us from hell, bring us out of hell. Now, the meaning of this is that no, Allah does not place us in hell. Allah is the one who helps us to come out of hell. It is us who take ourselves to hell. And this نُيَسَّرُهُ لِلْأُسْرَى means we ease the way for him to go towards this hardship, which is the hell. Of course, eventually the highest manifestation of it is hell. The people will go towards what they like. It's just like, for example, finding the like-minded, the cohorts here and there. Some say that on the Day of Judgment, people are left to themselves to find their ways. And the people find their cohorts. And this is not very far away from what the Quran mentions, يَوْمَ نَدْءُ كُلَّ أُنَاسٍ بِإِمَامِهِمْ. We call everyone with their imam, whatever the imam is translated to, into actions or leaders or whatever. It is this type of finding the cohorts which people would go through. So people would be eased into going to finding their own cohorts. People of hell would not enjoy living beside people of paradise. Of course they cannot. Allah would not allow that. Allah would separate evil and goodness. لِيَمِيزَ اللَّهُ الْخَبِيثَ مِنَ الطَّيِّبِ. Otherwise this khabith would destroy everything. However, even if they are allowed to do it, they would not enjoy it, because this is not something that their nature would accept. Although in hell, now you don't take it as some mystics say that in hell people enjoy whatever they have. No, they do not enjoy it. But they cannot have any other type of life. They think that this is the life that they should have. Torturing each other, hitting each other, swearing at each other. Why? Because this is self-centeredness which has brought them here. And everyone wants to overpower others in hell. And that's why they always torture each other to bring other inhabitants of hell under their power. And when, of course, this goes out of hand or exceeds the limit, Allah puts them in chains so that they do not excessively torture each other. And this is the meaning of إِنَّ لَدَيْنَا أَنْكَالًا وَجَحِيمًا or إِنَّا جَعَلْنَا لِلْكَافِرِينَ سَلَاسِلَ وَأَغْلَالًا. We have put for kafirin chains and things which hold them in a place. This is how their nature have brought them. So this taysir lil usra, nuyassiruhu lil usra, we ease their way towards their nature. Now, why I'm elaborating on this? Because this is a very important concept. In other words, we can say that it is not Allah that somehow punishes some people, rewards some people. Allah always is the giver. He gives whatever people want and whatever people nature desires. Evil people desire evil. Allah would extend His bounties. But this evil nature would turn that bounty into evil. and use it in an evil way. And good people would turn that into good and use it in a good way. Anyhow, وَمَا يُغْنِي عَنْهُ مَالُهُ إِذَا تَرَدَّى. His wealth shall not avail him when he perishes. تَرَدَّى, which is the master, means to fall from a high place. So it's either falling into hell or falling into the depth of the grave or perishing. So when he perishes, when he falls, then of course his wealth, as in the case of that man who did not give his palm tree, is not going to help him. إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا لَلْهُدَى وَإِنَّ لَنَا لَلْآخِرَةَ وَالْأُولَى. Indeed with us rests guidance. And indeed to us belong the world and the hereafter. Now this إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا لَلْهُدَى of course has some controversial discussions with it about is it God who guides people whoever he wishes, or is it the free will of people who accept guidance or not, which we have, I think, to leave it for next week, inshallah. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi tahirin.
Thank you very much. We'll now have question and answers. Is there any questions?
Sheikh, is it possible for somebody to have faith and not do good things?
Well, yes, we see many people like that. They have faith and they do not. But you can say that this is weak faith. But the stronger the faith goes, the better the person would become, of course, and the better the actions would become. Because faith had many, many degrees. We can say about faith, which has brought all these controversies, that faith eventually would save a person. Eventually it would save a person. But how many years that person should tolerate that sort of evil nature that he has created for himself is something that we do not know. And that's why they say the khulud in hell, that's eternal stay in hell, is not for people who had faith in their hearts. At any moment in their lives, even if at one moment they had faith, true faith in their hearts, then this is going to save them, because eventually it would turn their nature into something good.
In the same way, in the Salati Tanhani al-Fashai wal-Munkar, if somebody does his namaz regularly, and he's not a good person, does that mean that something is wrong in his faith or in his action?
That means something is wrong in his salat. Yeah.
Any more questions?
Okay, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum
assalam. May I correct something?
Sure.
You said Hafsa is the daughter of Abu Bakr.
Daughter of Umar,
second.
Sorry.
Yes, yes, of course.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Because
thank
it's you. Recorded, so nothing on your behalf. You mentioned that on a day of judgment, everybody would gather with the imam, but here it contradicts, it says, وَسَّعَ إِنَّ سَعْيَكُمْ لَشَتَّى. So on the own action and hard work. Can you explain that, please?
Yeah, as I said, this imam which is mentioned here has been interpreted in different ways. Some say imam is a leader. Now, a leader here doesn't mean a leader that we knew in this world. Maybe we do not know those leaders in this world at all. Those are the leaders who are sort of epitome of a sort of action which people do, which then they will become the leader of those people who have like actions like that, and would lead them towards their destiny. For example, about Pharaoh, he says, يَقْدُمُ قَوْمَهُ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ فَأَوْرَدَهُمُ النَّارِ. He is the leader of his people on the day of judgment and take them to hellfire. For good people, of course, the imams are different. This is one meaning. The other meaning of imam is interpreted as the book. So we call everyone by his book. And they say that in the Quran, Imam is used in the meaning of book as well. وَكُلَّ شَيْءٍ أَحْسَيْنَاهُ فِي إِمَامٍ مُبِينٍ. Everything we have gathered in a clear Imam, which means book here. And the third meaning is the Imam here means that actions. We call every people by their actions. So it does not contradict, even if we say it's Imam in the sense of a human leader, because that human leader is the symbol of the actions which people like to do, and therefore they are called by that leader.
So in other words, a person chooses the line. That means works hard, chose the right role model, and then with his own action. That in other words means this.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there is no conflict between saying that when we follow a person, but because following is not just talking, following is following in action, in behavior. And therefore, if you follow a person in behavior, it will become your Imam on the Day of Judgment.
Riaz Uncle.
Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh.
Alaikum salam.
Very simply, something different to the subject today, but it's slightly relevant. I have a problem identifying a person who is a Muslim. What is the lowest denomination of Muslim, the minimum that you need to do? Would I be right in saying you just have to say the kalima?
Thank you. Muslim, yes, if you say the kalima, you are regarded a member of the Muslim community, and then you have all the rights of a Muslim and all other things which are related to a Muslim, right? For example, you can marry Muslim women, you are regarded pure, you are regarded as a Muslim in all other relationships. This is what makes you a member of the community. This is Islam. However, then there are degrees of, this is sort of outer Islam, the exterior of Islam. Then, of course, there are degrees of faith inside which is quite different, has a different story.
The reason I ask is because there is somebody who is married to a Jew. And I went to their house and the Jewish Chronicle was on the table, but there was no sign of any other Muslim newspapers. Now, very soon we are going to vote for our local elections. Now, this person is going to stand. So how do we know whether this person has got inclinations towards the Muslims or towards the Jews?
No, but just by saying the kalima, you cannot determine that, of course. You have to be more knowledgeable, have more knowledge about the person to judge that. Even in some cases, supporting a non-Muslim in an election may be better for Muslims than supporting a Muslim. It is not a criterion which we have to use, that because he is Muslim, we vote for him, he may bring damage to Muslim community. So that's a completely different issue than the criterion which we say anyone who says the kalima is a Muslim and regarded as a member of the Muslim community, that doesn't mean that it's, then we have to make him our leader or whatever.
Thank you, that was most revealing. Maybe I thought you might throw in an anecdote from the time of the two-day party and how you used to differentiate between people who are good for the state or good for religion. I thought you might know, tell us a story about the...
At the time of the Prophet, you mean?
No, the two-day party in 79 and, you know, the Khomeini's revolution. And
two-day party, oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's Iranian politics. We better keep away from it here. We have more urgent things to look after in Iran than to the party.
Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Yeah. My question is related, actually. Whilst in terms of methodology, one can read, enhance one's knowledge, one can do ibadah to enhance faith in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I guess there is no real way that anyone can comment on any other individual's faith. I mean, in the medical world, we quite often tell our patients, pain is very personal. I can't feel your pain. I can't read your pain. I can't measure your pain. So on the same basis, faith is very personal for anyone to comment about another individual. However, what about one's own faith? What are the benchmarks can he can test or audit himself to say, well, I say to be a Muslim, I claim or overtly act as if I've got faith. Do I really have faith? How do I judge that for myself?
Well, that's a very difficult question, actually, and measuring one's own faith. The sort of commitment and conviction which comes to a person's heart, for example, if someone reaches to a state that says, okay, I want to perform salat now, that shows that this is an indicator that he has faith. Saying la ilaha illallah with heartfelt conviction is a sign of faith, of course. Then gradually, when the faith increases, things to become more clearer and clearer for a person with regards to his relation with God, with regards to things which people of the faith have said, understands them better, becomes more justified for him. Initially, many things which are said in the Quran or in Hadith or by people of faith are not justified for many of us. This shows that we have a distance in commitment, a distance in understanding. Gradually, for example, a verse of the Quran, initially we recite it, it's not justifiable at all. We say, okay, we accept it because it's the word of God. When the faith increases, we realize that, oh, this is the truth. This is what should be. In this way, the more our heart is opened to these things, this is this insharahu satr, which we'll talk about, inshallah, next week, about Huda. When the heart becomes open to these things, it shows that the level of faith has increased. And the more that increases, the more one becomes inclined towards the hereafter rather than this world. And this is another indicator of the faith, that the other world becomes more important than this world. This is another indicator. We, in Surah Sa'd, about the highest level of faith which Allah speaks, وَذَكُرْ عِبَادَنَا إِبْرَاهِيمَ وَإِسْحَاقَ وَيَعْقُوبَ أُولِي الْأَيْدِي وَالْأَبْصَارِ. Now, أُولِي الْأَيْدِي وَالْأَبْصَارِ means those who had both knowledge and wisdom. Ibrahim, Ishaq, and Yaqub. إِنَّا أَخْلَصْنَاهُمْ بِخَالِصَةٍ. We purify them for one thing, ذَكْرَ الدَّارِ, the remembrance of the other world. This is another indicator. So gradually it transpires for one that whatever is said, whatever is practiced by people of faith is more justified than whatever other people do. Accordingly, the meaning of the verse that the life of this world is play and sport. Now, we accept it because the Quran says it, but we do, it's not justified for us. We think, no, this is real. The play and sport is to talk about hell and heaven. That's just something imaginary. But as the faith increases, it would become very clear that, yes, this is play and sport, and the real thing is there. So these are some indicators which may help.
Riazan?
Alaykum, Sheikh. Thank you very much for your
lecture.
Sheikh, just going back to the opening of the surah, I just want to make sure that I've got this right. Did you say that the context or the tense was in the present tense when referring to night and the past tense when referring to the day? Is that correct?
Yes, yes. But this jallaha past tense here means that something which suddenly comes, it's not continuous. Not that something which happened in the past, because the present is that Layl is enveloping everything. And suddenly the day light broke it. Jallaha, it broke it.
So this is, this is that's the allegory for the prophet in the time.
Yes.
Of, okay,
yes.
Thank you very much.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh.
Alaykum as-salam.
I would like to kindly, I'll be grateful if you kindly enlighten on the regarding the compilation of the Quran, as you mentioned that our first Imam, Imam Ali Muttaqiyan, obviously had his compilation, but he later withdrew from circulation. In Imam's light of wisdom, can you share your thought as to what the plausible reasons for that would be? Was that mainly for encompassing the unity of the Muslims at the time, or would that kind of cause some refute amongst the people?
Why Imam withdrew the... Well, because they didn't want it. And yes, if he insisted, then it would have created some sort of discord and dissension in society. So that's why he said it's not important. The chronological order was not important. What was important were probably the mention of names and causes of revelations which were not palatable for some people, because the Quran does not mention names, but every instance of revelation was somehow related to some incidents, some people. And this is what Amir al-Mu'min had written in his copy, that for example this verse was revealed about these people, this verse was revealed about that people. It was that explanation that people probably did not like. And that's why Amir al-Mu'min withdrew it and said that you would not see it afterwards. He just wanted to say that this is something which in my whole lifetime that I was with the Prophet, I have gathered this and give it to you. You do not accept it? Okay. He just, and that copy we believe that is now, was with the A'imma alayhi wasalam as is, and is now with the 12th Imam alayhi
wasalam. In that regard, when inshallah, when our Imam appears, then would that be the Quran that in essence everybody else would adhere to?
I don't know. Maybe most of those references to people would become irrelevant at a later time. It was at that very time which it was very important. Because it was important because now people, the Muslim empire was expanding, people were coming into power, were appointed to posts. It was important to know that which people were blamed in the Quran, which people were somehow praised in the Quran, so that people knew what to do, who should be the leaders, who should be the followers. At the time of 12th Imam, that may be not something which is very relevant to the time, and therefore I think we would recite the same Quran in the time of the 12th Imam, although he gives a new interpretation to everything. That is what we seek from the Imam, certainly.
So is this not the real Quran we've got?
No, it's the real Quran. As I said, what was different in the compilation of Imam Ali alayhi salam was that it is said that it was compiled in the order of revelation, which of course that's somehow dubious as well. However, what is very, very important was the explanations written down by Imam Ali. As he said himself, I know which verse was revealed in night, which verse was revealed in day, which verse was revealed in battles, which verse was revealed while Prophet was in Medina, which verse was revealed regarding to which person. This was actually the outcome of his company with the Prophet and with the Quran during all his lifetime. He had put that down, and this is what he said, that because it is common knowledge for both Sunnis and Shia that for 6 months Amir al-Mu'mineen did not come out of his house unless for prayers. And he said, I have made a vow to compile the Quran. Now we know that the Quran was compiled by others, by Uwayy ibn Ka'b, by Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. We know that Abu Bakr was compiling of course, Abu Bakr did in a later time. What was important, and he said that Prophet had actually given me that mission to do it, was probably putting all that knowledge in one place about the different references of the verses of the Quran, things which would have shed light on the interpretation of the verses of the Quran. And that is what was lost. Otherwise, the Quran is the real Quran, yes.
At the beginning you mentioned that the preference would be for the causes of revelation rather than the order of the chronological order, because there are various different chronological orders. Are there not also problems with causes of revelation, because there are various traditions concerning those as well? That was the first issue. And the second issue was, you mentioned that you would want to argue that it is preferable to think in terms of that the compilation already existed during the time of the Prophet, in spite of perhaps Ubay ibn Ka'b and Abdullah ibn Mas'ud and others having the codex compiled. Does that necessarily imply that the codex that we have in our hand would have been necessarily from that, because there were variances in those codices as well?
Yes. Well, regarding the first issue, no, I said in this case we prefer it, because the context would support that cause of revelation. And therefore, we opt to say, because if we accept that cause of revelation, then the surah would be Madani, not Makki anymore. So we prefer in this case the cause of revelation over that traditions about the order. Not generally, of course, certainly. There are many different issues which we have to bear in mind when we try to make the preference, because the cause of revelation is reported both by Sunnis and Shiis, and they conform with each other, and many other things which support the idea. That's why I said that. The second issue about the codex, your question is how we know that Abdullah ibn Mas'ud and Ubay ibn Ka'b's copy were in the same order, or what is the question?
Except that these other codices existed at the time, mm-hmm. Does that necessarily mean that the codex we have in our hands, which was, depending on which traditions we accept, whether they were compiled in the time of Osman or Abu Bakr, that the codex that we have in our hands is the one that had been compiled at the time of the Prophet?
If for example, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud and Ubay ibn Ka'b had their own codexes, and the order of compilation was the same, this shows that it was an instruction by the Prophet. Otherwise, there is no other reason to think that both of them thought that this order of revelation would be good, compilation would be good. They think exactly the same thing, for example. As we know, for example, they say in the codex of Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, we didn't have the Mu'awwadhatayn. قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ أَنْ قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ, because he thought that every Muslim knows it, why should I place it there? Or he thought that these are things that the prophets taught people to recite for seeking refuge from shaitan, or whatever reason it said that he had not included them. Otherwise, there is no other report that there were differences between order of compilation in the two codexes. Also, when at the time of Abu Bakr the Quran was being compiled, there is no mention of differences of opinion about how the order of the compilation should be. And when Uthman was unifying the codexes, even in that time, we don't have any arguments that, for example, any mention that, for example, the companions argued about the order of revelation. So order of compilation. So it should be something which was agreed, a general agreement by everyone, that this should be the order of compilation. And this shows that this order of compilation should have come from the time of the Prophet, peace be on him, although until the Prophet was alive, the door to revelation was open. And no one knew when this book is coming to its end, until the Prophet passed away, peace be on him. And therefore, it is natural to think that whenever a verse was revealed, as about the verses, we have the order from the Prophet. For example, whenever a verse was revealed, Prophet said, place it in that surah, for example. About the surahs themselves, we don't have any reason to think the Prophet did not give that order, but companions, all of them agreed on one sort of order. This would become more clear when we think that Zayd ibn Thabit, who was a young scholar and was trusted by Abu Bakr and Umar in compilation, against all other high and tremendous scholars in knowledge like Abdullah ibn Masud and Ubay ibn Ka'b, there should have been something there. Why they didn't appoint Abdullah ibn Masud or Ubay ibn Ka'b, or even Abdullah ibn Abbas for that reason. Of course, Abdullah ibn Abbas was very young, but Zayd ibn Thabit was not much older than Abdullah ibn Abbas. Why did they appoint him, not these certain scholars? As we knew, for example, as we know in the time of Uthman, again Uthman appointed Zayd ibn Thabit for the unification. However, then came the disagreement about companions, about this appointment, and he removed him, and Ubay ibn Ka'b was placed in charge, so that everyone agreed in unification of this final compilation. When Zayd ibn Thabit was compiling that official codex, there was no disagreement about the order of compilation again. This all indicate that the order of compilation should have come from the Prophet, peace be on him.
Because time's running short, I know there are a few questions left. We'll just take two more, if that's okay. So, okay, no.
As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum as-salam.
You mentioned that for the next world we have to think now and act now. And in Surah Hashr it says, O you who believe, be careful of your duty to Allah and let every soul consider what it has sent on for tomorrow. Is this tomorrow talking about the next world? Or
yes, next world. وَالْتَنْدُرْ نَفْسٌ مَا قَدَّمَتْ لَقَدْ قَدْ is tomorrow, yeah. is the day of judgment, yeah.
As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum as-salam.
Sheikh, just to comment on Dr. Nizar's question about how do we measure our faith. In one of your lectures, you gave a hadith about when we measure how much Allah loves us, it's very easy. We measure how much we love Him.
Mm-hmm.
And could you relate that directly to faith?
Yes, absolutely, yes.
So, for example, if I said to Allah, I love you very much, and He said, okay, would you sacrifice your wealth? Well, maybe not that much. I've directly measured my faith.
Yeah.
Is that a reasonable assessment?
Yes, but even measuring that love is difficult as well. Inshallah, the Japanese would make a device soon.
Thank you very much. I think we'll end there, Sheikh. Thank you.
Salawat.